We're doing our class on the Jewish home, and we're in the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, the 10 days of repentance, which culminate with Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur being the Day of Atonement. Yom Kippur we fast, and we don't shower, and we don't anoint ourselves. We don't even use mouthwash on the morning of Yom Kippur. If you want to, you can have a toothbrush which you wash out the day before, and then it dries overnight, and then you can clean out your mouth with a relatively dry toothbrush in the morning, so you won't be putting new water in your mouth. But we're in a state where we're not thinking about our physical life. We separate the beds. The husband and wife don't hug and kiss on Yom Kippur. One of the things we're prohibited is intimacy. So let's take Yom Kippur as a point to learn from. Maybe we'll start with a story. A few years ago, my wife was on bed rest, and it was clear that if she would have to take care of the kids, she wouldn't be able to fast Yom Kippur. And we had a neighbor across the hall whose wife also needed a lot of help. So the night of Yom Kippur is not a big deal because it's regular. You just finished a big meal. You're full. You go to shul just like your wife deals every night. You can deal that night. Not a big deal. Yom Kippur in the morning starts being a little bit more challenging. So I go out to Vasikin. I daven nice and early. And I left the Vasikin minyan for Musaf because I need to come home and check. And lo and behold, the kids were doing what kids do. And they needed a lot of attending to. And when I could finally put them down for a nap, and the kids were all sleeping, I went out for 20 minutes, half hour, and I ran, and I caught a musaf at a different later minyan, right? By then, I could only make the later minyan. I caught my musaf, I came back, a few minutes after I come back, one of the kids wakes up, and I'm dealing, and comes Yom Kippur afternoon, I've missed most of davening and shul, and I feed the kids, I slice them apples, I give them supper, and I play with them on the porch, and then I put them down, and I daven my mincha and my ne'ila all alone, and only after the fast is over and the kids are sleeping do I run out to catch the tail end of ne'ila and ma'ariv, which I daven with a minyan. I have a neighbor who lives across the hall from us, and we said his wife was in the same state. And all Yom Kippur long, I see her dealing with the kids, and he comes home for a visit, and after Yom Kippur, he comes to me and says, "You know it was Yom Kippur yesterday, right?" So I say, "Yeah." So he says, "You know, most Jews go to shul on Yom Kippur." I said, "Yeah." So he says, "You know, my wife was telling me that you were home dealing with the kids all day yesterday." I said, "Not all day, but it's true. I was there much of the day dealing with the kids." So he says to me, "Don't you think your prayers are more important?" So I said, "No." So he said, I'll say the equivalent of, in childish terms, he said, "I'm going to Rav Eliashiv on you." he went to Rav Eliashiv. He wasn't after me. He meant it like in a joking way, but he really meant it. I told him, I think halachically that you don't, the right thing is that if your wife needs your help and she won't be able to fast on Yom Kippur, she'll have to break her fast because you went to shul, then I think halachically you have to be home. So he went to Rav Eliashiv.
Who is this?
This was my neighbor. We're good friends. Rav Eliashiv was the halachic authority till he passed away a year and a half ago.
He had glasses,
right?
He had glasses on that.
I don't know.
Beard, right?
So he went to Rav Eliashiv, and Rav Eliashiv told him, no, you have to stay home. If next year Yom Kippur, your wife needs you, and if by you going to shul, she won't be able to fast on Yom Kippur, then you have to be home. That's a bigger mitzvah. So what does that teach me? I could say, but I went to shul. That's my mitzvah today. You weren't able to fast. That's your problem. No, there's a partnership here. Even in the way we look at our mitzvah here of Yom Kippur, you could say, she's dealing with the kids. If that brings her to a point where she has to break her fast, so be it. What do you want from me? That's not my mitzvah, but it is. Bringing up kids is our mitzvah. And keeping the Torah and mitzvos is our mitzvah. Very often we remember that it's our mitzvah when we're looking over someone's shoulder and saying, hey, you should be doing that different. Come on, you're my wife. Don't you want me to tell you? We have to apply this idea when it comes to things like Yom Kippur. It's our partnership. So then I'm going to come home and check. If this year they asked me to daven in the shul, one of the tefillot is chazan, I said, look, I'm willing to prepare it, but you have to have a backup because I have to see how my wife is feeling because I might not be there. I might not be in Yom Kippur in shul, davening with the tzibur. Right. So we, when we think about our partnership in mitzvot, we said we have to be careful. Each person needs their space. No one can feel like someone's breathing down our neck. But we do have to think about the partnership in the sense that we have to help. God willing, your wives will be going to mikveh, right? A woman, after her period, she checks that she's clean, and then for 7 days she checks herself. Once she sees she's clean, then she goes to mikveh on the seventh day. Who's going to be with the kids when she goes to mikveh? You know, go call your mother, right? Call your mother, call a babysitter. Yeah, but she has to know that if she can't do that, we're there for her. Some people say, what's a man's job in the house? Wherever you can help, you should help. Do you do dishes? I got this question the first year I was in Machon Meir. Do you wash dishes in your house? So the answer is, I'm not home to wash the dishes for many of the meals, but when I can, I do. The first thing I do when I come home past 11 o'clock. I take out the garbages around the house, and I do whatever dishes are left in the sink. So most people say, you finished your job. Don't you want to come home and rest? You're coming home to your second job. We also have a job in the house. Men like to think of the home as their castle. I came home, great. You can get me my tea, honey, right? I just got home. I just did my work for the day. No, you didn't. You have another job. You have to be a husband. You have to be a parent. Your wife's been working hard. This is a partnership, so that means we have to invest in the partnership. So obviously there's a division of tasks, but that doesn't mean I can say that's not my job. If you can help, you should help. So some people go to daven early Shabbos morning because it's very important to their wives to go to shul Shabbos after later Shabbos morning to hear davening. So they manage. I know some wives that get up early and go vasikin. I personally think it's wrong to bring newspapers home. Not just because the content is usually a waste of time, but also because you end the meal Friday night, so no one wants to get up and do dishes. No one wants to put the kids to sleep. Friday night is that time where everyone wants to crash, right? Sit at the table or crash. But that's exactly why it's important that you're not in the middle of a good book or reading a newspaper, because then you're like, just a second, honey, just a second, I forgot this. This happened to me Rosh Hashanah or Friday night. One of the kids was reading a comic book. And he said to me, Abba, is this an appropriate comic book? I said, I don't know. You know, it's funny to get the question when he's on the last page. But he says to me, it's a series. Should I be reading the next part of the series? So I picked it up to look for a second. The next second I looked down, the table was clear, everything was done, and I'd have said, without even noticing, just a second, leaping through the book, seeing what he's reading. So, what? That's a good question. It was definitely engrossing. That I can tell you. Would I recommend the series? I don't know. But it was at a point where I felt like if a teacher would ask me, should I expose children to this series, I would say no. But once the kid's exposed to it and he's in the series and he wants to continue it, I wouldn't tell him not to read it.
How do you decide that?
It depends on how much it goes for or against the educational values you're trying to give children. Meaning, the book, I didn't think the book was terrible. The whole plot was about how Nazis had created a space station on the black side of the moon. And there was a whole group of Nazis who had developed robots and they were planning to conquer the planet, and Yosile is going to save the day. With what he, okay, so because his name is Yosele, so because he has a Jewish name, now it becomes a Jewish theme, it's a Jewish idea. What's Jewish about it? I'm saying there's nothing Jewish about it. But there's nothing too terrible about it either. So there are bad guys and good guys, and it's not violent to a point where you see things that are cruel, that you're not exposing your child to cruelty. Yeah, there are good guys and bad guys, okay. So I'm saying it's not. And my ideal book would have some positive content to it. I didn't say anything positive about the book. but I didn't see anything too negative about it. So that's what I'm saying. It's not the book I would have chosen, but it's also not something which I tell him, don't read. Like, if he started reading it and he's enjoying it, fine. It's not a... Yes, Yaakov.
If you could answer
I think that it depends on the age and the society. If you're sending your kid to school where half the kids are going to have iPhones, you can't censor anything. He's exposed to everything. I'm saying if you're living in a place and you're exposing him by sending him to school to a place where he's seeing everything, then you have to think about it totally differently. Meaning a lot of it depends on the society you'll be bringing your kids up in, the schools you're sending them to, and what they're getting exposed to. If you have the benefit of living on a yeshuv, and you're living in a yeshuv where, thank God, the children are not coming to school with iPhones, and the children, at least at the age of 9, 10, 11, are not exposed to everything on the street, then you have that benefit where you can decide what you're exposing a child to. I think even if your child is exposed to all the things on the internet and the cell phone, so then you have to think how to, I don't know if censorship is the right word, or how to guide which books are appropriate for them and which not. You go to the library with a kid, you look in general which authors they're reading, you speak to other parents, you try to understand what's appropriate for a kid. I don't think it's right that a kid will be reading Stephen King at age 11. I don't remember, I opened, all my friends were reading Stephen King, so at somewhere around 14, 15, I opened the book, and I saw I wouldn't be able to sleep that night, and I closed it, and I never opened another one. But I got the picture of what the book's all about. I think there are books that expose children to cruelty and to immoral activities, and that's, you're expanding a child's norm, and that's very, very wrong. I'm saying you want the child to grow up with a healthy perspective, and later on, unfortunately, they're going to have to deal with the exposure to all the unhealthy things in the world. You're right. The way you expose a child gradually depends on the age and depends on the society. And I think that it's pitiful that we are as exposed to cruelty as we never were before. Today we know about every beheading and every, It's terrible. We're exposed to things all over the world, to every type of cruelty and abnormality. You know, when people do things that are heinous and hideous, once upon a time, it was localized. Today, you hear about it all over. The news reports, you hear about it all over. So we are overexposed. I don't know if that's the reality. Yeah, I'm not sure. I think that if one person in a million slices people up and eats them for breakfast, that's not the reality of the world. So when Jeffrey Dahmer did the things he did, maybe that's before you guys' time, that was a guy who they found his freezer filled with body parts of people. He was eating them. So I know about Jeffrey Dahmer. That's pitiful. It's very pitiful because most of the world is not Jeffrey Dahmer. So why do I have to know about it? And so I don't think that's the norm. I think we live in a world that overexposes us. And if so long as we can try and help our children develop normally, and Jeffrey Dahmer is not a part of the norm. I grew up where Jeffrey Dahmer was a part of the norm. You know, they made jokes in school like, what shampoo does he use? I'm not going to answer that. It's not right. That's overexposure. But again, you have to first gauge which society you're bringing up your child in, and then you can decide what level of censorship you can do. If he's going to be where everyone has cell phones, you have to think about what you're doing with the exposure to internet and pornography and violence. Saying your challenges are different depending on where you're bringing up a child. And then you can decide what level of exposure you want to give him. Be it the computer. So my kids type things on the computer, but they don't surf the web. But I could allow myself to do that because every other child in school does that. And I send my children, thank God, to a school where if I send them to a friend's house, I don't have to worry that he's surfing the web with that friend. They're not doing that. All the parents are like-minded in that sense, that we feel like at this age they should not be exposed to this. Later on, they'll use the web. I learned to use the web when I was 18. Okay, I had my first internet connection, 18, 19, maybe even 20. But then again, that was when everyone was learning what the internet was. The internet was just coming out then. So what? So I have a website today and I manage it, and I manage just fine. But I'm saying, so he doesn't have to know it at 12 or 11. I'll print out articles for them. When they ask me questions about science, I'll bring them information. When we talk about things and they ask me, I'll show them on the computer. But they themselves, I don't think I have to expose them to that at this stage. Down the road, obviously, yes. I'm saying, but that's, I can allow myself that because of the society. So the question is very dependent on where you're bringing up your kid.
It's only really you should be to do that.
No, when we lived in Jerusalem, we when we knew who their friends were and which houses they were playing in, so we could maintain the same thing.
Once you let them out on their own, you don't really know what they're doing.
That's a mistake that parents make. It's not right that a child at age 9 and 10 is roaming and you have no idea where that child is. Why? You can tell a kid a parameter. In this area, you can ride your bike today. Right now, you're riding a bike. You want to go to a friend, you come and ask permission. It's not the end of the world. You have a picture of where he's going. What?
I wasn't allowed to do this till like senior high school.
Okay.
Yeah, my mom is.
Well, is it possible that all the censorship and stuff would create a reality in which the kid is so, like, he knows that there's so much more out there, and that will create like this grass is always greener on the other side, kind of.
For
like,
sure.
But we'll chase him away from you.
100%. I agree that it has to be done.
So much, you know?
I agree. I think that if it's overdone or if it's done without explaining and without working with a child and without making it palatable and pleasurable to a child, then for sure it will cause an opposite reaction. It's a balancing act, and it's a very hard balancing act, for sure. I agree with you. I agree with you that for many children, if you're going to censor them and you're going to be tough with them, you're going to lose. But then that doesn't mean to throw the baby out with the bathwater. It means finding a balance. That's why I said, I didn't say no to the comic book, even though I'm not a fan of it. I really think there's nothing Jewish about it but the names. Meaning, but there's nothing too terrible about it. So the approach in censorship is, the approach is, wherever possible, say it's okay. You only say no where you have to say no. And then the child sees that you're not trying to make his life miserable.
Okay, but what type of things?
And we take them to libraries. You have to understand, every week they go to the library. It's not like they don't have what to read. They read about 15 books a week. I mean, they keep reading. It's not like I'm censoring, you can't read, that's not kosher, that's not, da, da, da.
Books a week.
Yeah, we leave the library with piles.
What size books?
Oh, little books, kids' books.
Oh.
No. But I'm saying, so you think about it as censorship, like, I'm keeping an eye that it's within a parameter that I think is not harmful. But it's not that you can only read Torah, only Mishnah. No. Okay, I'm happy to address other questions, but class is over. Whoever wants, goodbye. Whoever wants can stick around. I'll take the later bus tonight. Yeah.
How would you answer your son or daughter if he told you, I don't want to eat bread because then I have to bench? Because technically, there's something wrong with that. Because if you don't eat bread, you don't have to bench. But it's not a positive attitude to avoid eating bread, so you don't have to bench.
All right, I'll tell him you're 100% right, so don't eat bread. Because 100%. Because the fact that he doesn't want to bench, because he doesn't connect to benching. If I have an issue that he doesn't connect to benching, then I have to work on connecting to benching. I don't have to stand there and lecture him and tell him, you should really be appreciative that it takes you 3 minutes to more to sit here and bench. No, at his age, he doesn't connect to it. It means nothing to him.
I'm saying, how do you make that connect? You can't just tell him the Torah says bench, if you eat bread. That wouldn't really resonate.
That doesn't resonate. He's 100% right. The Rambam says there are things that we don't, we don't connect to, and that's fine. Over time, I'd like him to connect. If I want him to connect, then over time, I'll talk to him about the blessings we have from Hashem, the idea that saying thank you helps us build our connection with Hashem, the idea that every time we do mitzvah, we grow and we get merits for it. But that's a global growth I'm aspiring to. But when a child... A woman once called up and said, I don't like the laws of family purity, and my husband says I should like them. What am I supposed to do? So I said, tell your husband that I said that you're 100% normal. It's okay. These aren't laws that are pleasurable. These are laws that we have to do. We can look at the benefits in them, but it's 100% normal that there are people who don't enjoy it. Who likes it that the husband and wife have to separate for 12 days? Obviously, that's not fun. It has benefits, and it ends up giving us tremendous blessings in our homes. Right, but on the moment, is it fun? No, it's not fun. Do I enjoy fasting Yom Kippur? I like eating. I happen to not mind fasting so much, but I'm saying most people like eating. And there's nothing wrong with that. So a child says, I'd rather go out and play, and if I eat bread, I'm going to have to bench. I don't want to bench. I say, fine, so don't eat bread. No, I think it's wrong to fight that. I think he's being a normal child, so that's fine. You know, we sat at the Seder, and one of the kids said, I can't drink the fourth cup. Told you the story? So I said, then don't. So we had someone sitting at the table from Machon Meir, who looked at me, and he came to me after the Seder, and he said, you know, the biggest thing I learned at the Seder, I'm listening, he says, was that you said, so don't. If I'm going to pressurize the kid and tell him you have to drink four cups, he's a kid. What I did tell him was, you remember when you drank the extra grape juice after the first cup and second cup and third cup, I told you that you probably will not have the stomach to drink a fourth cup if you keep drinking like this? So he said, yeah. So I said, okay, so then next year maybe we should try remembering that. And for this year, if you can take a small sip, good. And if not, fine. Don't feel bad about it. You'll learn for next year. Because as was mentioned earlier, you want the kids to feel good about the mitzvahs. So then we have to give compliments, not criticism. And they have to feel positive about it. Yes?
Without the sunflower in the Jewish home black, pretty much talks about a very traditional role for the wife. And what it... Kids while the husband is out running, about working,